So you know how things sound at higher, like they're at higher frequencies as they approach you, and then
Oh,
they,
okay.
as they, yeah, that's the Doppler effect. So he's essentially approaching and then going away from his mic again and again, is what it sounded like.
Okay.
So it's like an ambulance where, you know, it comes past you and it's like.
Wait, could you, in theory, if you put someone on like a on like one of those like dollies that used to move they used to move cameras like forward and backward, could you do that with can you do auto tune with that? Like move someone really fast forward and backward.
Hey guys, welcome to Debunked, our podcast where we discuss quite literally everything about anything. My name is Stillman, and I'll be your host today, along with
Rushi.
Kaushik.
Kailosh. And Tejas. So, without further ado, let's begin.
So today we're going to be doing something different. Our podcast is adopting a new format so we aren't limited to talking solely about politics. Those of you who already have been following us know that we're a group of friends with varied interests, so we thought we'd share more of those interests with you. We're going to be making weekly episodes where we discuss the latest developments or cool concepts from three main genres: politics, science, and technology slash gaming. This week, we're breaking down the latest developments in the US election race, the Supreme Court hearings. There are some new scientific discoveries we'd like to talk about, and then there's also an update covering the Apple event and the console wars. So let's just dive in. First and foremost is the US election race. So I would like Kailash and Rushi to start this conversation now.
So, as we know, this past week, Joe Biden and Donald Trump had differing town halls instead of the debate that they were supposed to do together. And the difference couldn't be starker between the two. So, Rushi, would you like to talk about a few of the basic things that happened there?
So basically, honestly, it was pretty expected, like which town hall would be which. The Biden town hall, it was normal. What do you expect? Like calm. Like even if you whether you agreed or disagree with him, like it was pretty calm, very political in nature. Like nothing out of the ordinary. The Trump town hall was. It wasn't as unhinged as the debate, but it was still pretty hostile. And what would you say about this? I mean, was that pretty hostile? I thought it was decent.
It was actually more than hostile. The feeling I got from it was that he's dodging a lot of questions, and he didn't answer a single question that was asked of him, did he? Like even about the tests from the debate. I believe he was asked about whether he or not he received a test on the day of the debate itself, and he said he can't remember whether he did or whether he didn't, and he just kept on jumping between maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Who knows? So, I mean, what I got away from what my takeaway from those two town halls was that Trump just tried to deflect. He was on the defensive for this one. He just tried to defend his position. He didn't talk about any policies, just tried to defend himself. Whereas Biden actually dived into a lot more of what he's going to do economically and in terms of just social reform. He did have a lot of statistics and just he fleshed out a detailed plan for tax cuts. I believe that was one of his stellar moments. So it was fairly good. I actually liked Biden's performance in his town hall just simply because he was able to connect better to his audience. What did you guys think?
Yeah, personally, it was a lot more easier to understand compared to the Trump one. Most of the Trump debate was literally just, him trying to deflect questions or not properly answering them, or maybe some hostile messages from the audience, or hostile questions. But Biden actually laid out his plans that he has more in detail than most people would have liked to know. Because before it wasn't as specific, but now he's laying out his specific plans for things like climate change and tax cuts. So I felt that a voter who watched either of these they probably would have taken away more from the Biden one just because there was more of a focus on policy.
I mean, like, honestly, for me, like, sorry about that. Taking away, like, yeah, I guess you could take away more from the Biden's thing, but at the same time, like, you kind of already know their policy positions. Like, there was nothing new in any of these. Like, I didn't walk away with knowing anything new. Like, forget about policy, just like even viewpoints or like just character or anything like that. I didn't walk away with knowing anything new. So, yeah, I guess you could, like, if you didn't know much about, you know, Biden stuff, yeah, you could walk away. But I think most people know about that.
I feel like we're just doing rinse and repeat cycles with every single, you know, major press event that they're having. So we're just going to have to see any major, like, out of the blue developments, you know, things that are dynamic. Because as of right now, everything is kind of flat. It's all very similar in terms of how everything is going. None of them really have anything new to say. So let's move on, actually, to the Supreme Court confirmation hearings of Amy Coney Barrett. Very interesting. I've seen a lot of clips floating around. So what did you guys think?
Most of it was just her stonewalling whenever she was asked about, like, any hypothetical situations. So, like, Cory Booker asked about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare and what she would do to that were a hypothetical case to come up at the Supreme Court, and she was a justice. So questions like that, she really just kind of refused to answer or gave a very indirect response or just didn't answer the question properly at all. And it would be easy to understand why she did that, you know, in the polarized atmosphere that exists in the country today. She just tried to appear neutral and someone who will look at things objectively. But the senators there were busy, you know, indirectly kind of fighting for their political sides, you know, making arguments as to, you know, why this nominee is beneficial or not beneficial.
Yeah, that's true. I saw this one particular clip from the hearings that was, or one particular thing that was trending was that Amy Coney Barrett claimed that she's an originalist, which a lot of people are saying is very odd and hypocritical because she's a woman, especially because, you know, when you talk about originalism, it's basically interpreting the Constitution as it was written originally in the late 1700s. So being an originalist as a woman and as basically any single minority group in America, it seems very hypocritical. I don't know what you guys think about that. So enlighten me.
I mean, this entire thing is formality anyways. Like, she's going to get selected by the Senate. So, I mean, this is just like, I guess, a theater almost.
Yeah. True words can't be said. This is pretty much how it goes, right? Everything they ask really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Hey, maybe it might stir up some buzz for a couple of minutes, couple of days, but like after that, nothing is really going to happen. The GOP controls the Senate and she's going to become a Supreme Court justice. So let's move on to international affairs. So one major thing that occurred was the re-election of the New Zealand Prime Minister, which is pretty decent, pretty good news, actually. I saw a lot of world leaders congratulating her on her re-election as well. What do you guys think this means for international politics, especially? She's been outspoken after the Christchurch shooting. So what do you guys
think? I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, she's probably like – it's a surprise to nobody that she won a re-election. I mean, if you look at how she handled COVID, 25 people died. Like, that's crazy. Like, more people probably died, like, within an hour in the U.S. than have in New Zealand, like, completely. Like, she's, like, one of the most popular leaders in the world, and, like, it's not surprising that she got re-elected.
Yeah. Her
presidential hold over New Zealand is definitely impressive. Her ability to rid the country of the virus, her ability to handle such a tragic attack, all while holding a baby throughout her first term. This is an exceptional first presidential term for her. And
prime minister, but yeah. Okay, but yeah, she is actually one of my favorite world leaders. Absolutely phenomenal the job she did, because I mean, her country is still having a very sizable population at 4 million, but
5.5 million.
Okay, 5.5 million. I am checking old statistics, but yeah, her. The way she has managed an international crisis, the crisis of such large proportions, to the point where only 25 people died, you know, that's phenomenal. And not only that, she's very popular with her people. I feel like New Zealand isn't very polarized either. So things are going well for New Zealand.
I mean, after the...
Yeah, it's not even... Wait, can I... Oh, you want to go?
Go for it.
So after the Christchurch shootings, right, like every single shooting here in the United States, you see no action on anything, whether that's gun control, mental health, whatever it is. But in New Zealand, after they had just one shooting, they were immediately able to like pass a new gun control law. And whether you support it or not is beyond the point. It's more so that they were able to take quick action in line with what the people expected and what the people wanted. So, like, that shows what an example of a good leader is, because they were able to take action on such an issue far quicker than, you know, here, places like here in the United States.
Yeah, decisive, very firm, and eventually is leading her country to prosperity. And I don't know, what else would you expect from a leader? I feel like she is one of the best in the world. So let's actually move on from politics, because we have talked about it for a while. Now some interesting developments in science, which I personally found very, very fascinating. There was a recent article on stellar spaghetti. So essentially what happened was a star kind of collided with a black hole, if I'm not being mistaken here. In this event, essentially what happened was spaghettification, or some, it's a term that astronomers use, but essentially what happens is when you venture too close to a black hole and you kind of endlessly get sucked in, the force of gravity is so strong, it will pretty much just pull you, stretch you apart, and break you into like very, very infinitesimally thin strands, like noodles essentially, and basically just your shreds just, you know, rotate around the black hole and they knock each other in.
Fascinating.
So when we were talking about stellar spaghetti, we have to talk about this one event that happened very recently, where a supermassive black hole at the center of a galaxy ended up swallowing a star, essentially, but in one of the most, you know, unique and quote-unquote messy ways possible. So this star ended up colliding into the black hole, and half of it ended up getting sucked in after it ended up colliding with itself, which is very, very cool and weird. And then the rest of the mass was actually like disintegrated, and it was ejected, or like it was sent out of the black hole at pretty much a speed that is few percent that of the speed of light. So that was blown outward into space. And what we were able to observe from radio emissions, x-rays, and gamma rays was a very, very cool, complex way of essentially stellar death by black holes. Do you want to add anything to that, Kaushik?
I don't really have much to say. Yeah, it's spaghettified star that gets sucked into a black hole, it's rotated around it really quickly, and then just nom nom. I guess.
nom, nom.
Like,
but a few statistics about this this event itself. So the supermassive black hole, supermassive black holes are usually at the centers of galaxies, and there's one in the center of the Milky Way galaxy as well. These supersized versions of black holes are just millions and billions of times the mass of our sun. So they're huge. We are like our sun is like an insignificant speck in comparison to what the mass of this is. And the energy released from this event was also quite high, a lot of orders of magnitude above that produced by our sun. So this is very cool. I like reading about it. It's pretty fun. But other than that, another development in science which correlates to physics actually is the first room temperature superconductor being theorized / discovered. So people actually, if you guys don't know what a superconductor is first, a superconductor is essentially a material that has little to no resistance and can conduct electricity almost perfectly. And another unique property of them is that they're able to kind of cause magnets to levitate on top of them, which is caused by an effect which I won't be able to dive into as of right now. But essentially how you make a superconductor is by, first and foremost, getting something to get getting objects to go very certain chemical compounds to go very, very cold. And usually superconductors are near temperature of 0 Kelvin. So that's very, very inconvenient if you want to use them in practical applications. But for the first time very recently, we've discovered that there could actually be a room temperature superconductor in the form of liquid hydrogen. But the only problem with that is you need structures that are comparable to that what you would find in Earth's core. So to make liquid hydrogen, which will be a superconductor at give or take about 273 degrees Kelvin, it would require immense amounts of pressure, because as we all know, hydrogen is a gas. So I just like the concept of this, you know, eventually when we do find a way to pressurize it properly, this could have a lot of applications. What do you guys think?
Applications like what?
So, one really cool application about metallic hydrogen is that it can be used as fuel for rockets as well. So you could essentially end up fitting more fuel. This is a crude way to say it, but you can end up fitting more fuel into the same space within a rocket because of the high pressure. And it ends up creating more impulse or more time on impulse. So you can end up accelerating the rocket for a lot longer. So you can, you know, basically what it means is that you'll require a lot less stages to get up into space and into orbit and whatnot. The only problem with that is if it would be a little bit inefficient, because the temperatures produced from this metallic hydrogen fuel would exceed like 7,000 Kelvin. So they could end up like seriously damaging the rocket, because we don't have any substance that can resist that. So other than that, I don't think we have anything else for science, but those are two pretty cool tidbits we found to happen very recently. Do you guys want to add anything?
I thought it was pretty cool. Did not hear this before, but
yeah. I'm not sure whether to like feel like, oh, that's cool, or to be like existentially horrified. Because like,
I'm existentially horrified every day, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
For one reason or the other, we're all existentially horrified.
Yeah.
So let's move on to
we're all gonna go to the ground.
Let's move on to technology and gaming developments. So
basically, we had this Apple event thing, right? First of all, we had the HomePod Mini, which I think is the stupidest product on planet, I'm going to be honest. Because, like, the problem with the original HomePod was, yes, its price, it was expensive, but just it had Siri, which is garbage. And this one is just Siri, but smaller. So, yeah, that's my opinion on that. Short and simple. But then we had the interesting things. We had the announcement of four phones. The iPhone 12 Mini, the iPhone 12, iPhone 12 Pro, and iPhone 12 Pro Max. Which, these phones, they fill an interesting segment. Like, this is the first time Apple's unveiled four phones at an event. And, like, the pricing scheme for these phones are also really interesting, too. Before we get into that, I guess new features we should probably, like, discuss. One of them is, like, the design. I don't know if you guys know, like, how the iPhone 4, 4S, 5, and 5S looked. But basically, like, that boxy design, yeah, that's back. That's honestly one of my favorite features. Also, all the screens are updated too. Like, iPhone 12 mini and iPhone 12, like they now have OLED displays. Like the regular iPhone line, the non-Pro line, used to only have LED displays. Now it's OLED displays. That's a plus. What else? Oh, yeah, these phones also have 5G, which right now, if you're living in the U.S. at least, is not the most important thing, but good future-proofing, I guess. Although they did bring in, like, the CEO of Verizon, which was, like, it just felt like a Verizon ad for, like, a few minutes, not going to lie.
I mean,
like,
Verizon does have a pretty extensive 5G network that they're building, like, at least right now compared to...
I know, but, like, it felt like an ad, definitely. Like, that for Verizon. That was, like, that was a little bit, anyways. And then finally, what else? Two things. The camera upgrade, which I'll get into in a minute, and the charging situation. So they're not going to include a charger in the box anymore, but they will include a cable. And the main problem I have with this, see, Apple's logic is two things. They're saving the environment, which I'll get into that in a minute, and like most people already have a charger at home, which, to be fair, is true, but the wrong type of charger. See, this is the first time an iPhone will be shipping with a Lightning to USB-C port. Most people have a USB-A power brick, not a USB-C power brick. Which, that's the problem, because that means unless they have a wireless charger, they can't charge their phone. So many people are going to have to go out and buy this new power brick, which is an extra $20. And again, like Apple's main reasoning was, like second main reasoning was how they're saving the environment, I think. They had a number, right? It's like the equivalent of taking out 450,000 roads off the car each year.
Roads off the car. Yes.
Roads off the car.
And this cars is off how the road. People are technology, guys. Roads get off the car.
I mean, no, that's actually stupid.
I mean, technically.
I was trying to justify it, but like, no.
Yeah, we'll keep that in. We'll keep that in.
All right, anyways. But here's the problem with that, right? If most people don't have a charging brick, USB-C charging brick, they're going to have to buy one. And the problem is, the charging brick, like, normally would just come with the phone, but now it has, not only did it buy it separately, it comes with its own separate packaging, with its own separate instructions, manual, all this stuff, and it has a whole different, like, supply chain now since they're being sold separately. Like, I don't see how this saves the environment that much. Like, I feel like this was just, like,
yeah,
like save money and like a quick cash grab. I don't...
5G antenna that they're using costs a lot.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Like, if it was a USB-A connector that they gave you, then, yeah, I could see how it's justified, but this is stupid in my opinion.
They had to save money, though.
Like, now let's get onto the cameras.
The 5G antenna costs so much that they would have had to increase the prices to keep giving you all the stuff that you want, so they had to put the cost somewhere.
Yeah, 5G modems are hella expensive. Like, they're very expensive. All right, anyways, getting to the cameras, so... On the 12 mini and 12 pro, they have two cameras. They have the regular camera, and they have like the wide angle camera. These cameras, the main thing about these cameras is that they have much better low light performance now. Which the low light performance on the 12 pro, 12 pro max, and 12 and sorry, not the 12, the 11, the 11 pro, and 11 pro max were already really good to begin with. Apple's claiming like a really big improvement for like the low light performance, which I'm really excited to see because the camera seemed to me at least the biggest upgrade for these phones, and the 11 line already has some of the best cameras on a smartphone, so this can be really interesting. Here's where things get interesting, though. The iPhone 12 and 12 Pro Max, no, sorry, the iPhone 12 Pro and the iPhone 12 Pro Max, God, these naming schemes, I swear. Anyways. So most people, what they thought was going to happen is that the 12 Pro Max would just be a bigger 12 Pro, which was true for the 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max, and is mostly true this year, except in the camera department. In the camera department, the 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max have completely different camera systems. Well, the main shooter is the same, but the other two are different. And let's talk about – actually, no, sorry. The main shooter is the one that's mostly different. So let's talk about the tech specs of this one. Apple's claiming on the 12 Pro Max an 87% low light improvement on the 12 Pro Max's camera. Now, what metrics they use to measure this, I have no clue. But that's still like, if that number is even in the ballpark of how much of a low light performance like boost this is, that's huge, because Apple already had really good low light performance, especially with night mode. This is just on a whole new level. Like, if this is true, like that, if it's around 87%, again, phone has to be tested, but That's pretty big news. I mean, excited about the main thing with these cameras.
I don't use the low light feature that much, but some people might. So go on.
And also the thing that was also improved with these cameras, that like the stabilization, it's a sensor stabilization now instead of a lens stabilization, which if you don't know too much about that, basically like if you look at a high-end like mirrorless camera, one that recently came out is a Sony A7S Mark III, like it's about $3,500. So high-end mirrorless and DSLR cameras, they have like sensor stabilization instead of lens stabilization, which is amazing. Like sensor stabilization is really good, so for photos and videos, just gonna make everything just like smooth. Like you're not gonna have any hiccups in it anymore, because everything's just gonna be smooth. So just final thoughts on this. Like I think a few things disappointed me. I think the thing that disappointed me is the most is like the display is not 120 hertz, which most people won't care really, but I really like it because it just makes phones feel a lot smoother. I felt phones like that have 120 hertz, and man, it feels so smooth. And Apple even has technology. Their iPad Pros have the ProMotion technology. I really wish that was there. And obviously, like the power brick not being included, like pisses me off too. But overall, these look like decent improvements. Again, these phones have to be tested and stuff before anything conclusive is said. But it looks pretty good so far. I mean, I felt like they made such a big deal about 5G this year, and like it makes sense. Like, there's a lot of hype around 5G, but like, to me, it's just like a future-proofing thing. But I'm happy it's there. And overall, it's pretty good upgrade.
Personally, I wasn't too hyped about much of it. The camera upgrades are pretty decent. 5G, personally, I think the technology still isn't ready yet. Future-proofing or not. There's just a general problem with 5G, with it being a very high frequency, so like you can't get it inside of buildings or certain types of buildings. So I feel like people are gonna have to work on that technology a little bit more before it actually becomes efficient and usable. But other than that, it didn't really blow me away. I was expecting some more products and developments that were actually useful, you know, like the computational wise, I didn't think there was that big of a leap. So I don't know. Personally, it wasn't the best. But other than that, let's actually move on to our final topic of the day, which is the console wars. So there have been some developments from both sides. The main contenders here are obviously Sony and Microsoft, with Xbox and PlayStation 5. So this week we saw a UI release with PlayStation 5. It was pretty good. The look of it, the aesthetic was pretty good. They did declutter the field of view when you go down certain applications. So yeah, in general, the PlayStation showed off its UI. It has also shown off other features in the past, but it's been fairly limited in terms of how the actual performance or feel of the console is. The UI looks pretty good, but again, not that great of a development. Microsoft, on the other hand, they've done some pretty big reveals in terms of giving out their Xbox Series X to YouTubers, multiple YouTubers, and having them demo gameplay on their channels. So they've used games like Dirt Rally 5 or something, where we can see the extent to which, first of all, how seamlessly the games load in, and then also how good they look. Does anyone have any additions? Did you guys notice anything else?
I mean, like, the loading time
is
absolutely
I've
insane.
Seen someone actually run.
I mean, going from, like, a slow hard – going from, like, a slow hard drive to, like, a PCIe Gen 4 and NVMe SSD is just ridiculous. Like, I also noticed, too, like, obviously, like, this is 60 FPS video, so you can't really tell about how smooth it is. But, like, the reviewers saying it's smooth, so I'll trust them on that. And the graphics look definitely better than the Xbox One. I mean –
Yeah, this is like that's a what I big improvement. When you jump generations. The biggest surprise for me was just how, not a surprise, but like the thing I'm most excited for is the SSD. Dude, I've seen some YouTubers run Grand Theft Auto games on it, and you know how infamous they are for their long loading screens. You just look at screenshots from the game and hear that annoying music for like 5 minutes. And apparently the new SSDs have like cut that in, cut the loading time into like a fourth of the time to like a third of the time. It's nuts. So seriously saves a lot of time. The computing power on this new generation is nuts. So I really like it. Other than that though, there haven't been that, the developments haven't been that great. They did reveal some new, gameplay for Miles Morales, the Spider-Man game, on PS5 from something called, from some company called Game Informer. So that looked pretty good. But other than that, there isn't anything that great. So again, we're going to wait till November and to actually, some of us will actually get hands on with the console, and then we'll talk about our experiences and whatnot. But until then, I think that we're pretty good. We don't have much to say other than that. Do you guys have anything to add on?
I mean, not really. I mean, I'm just like looking for like Sony to do the same thing. They did it with like some Japanese creators, but like they didn't.
They just come up with weird schemes with fast food.
I really want to see what Sony has to do.
I like Sony better. Even though Xbox is clearly winning in the hardware department. Before we leave off, there's a really quick word from our sponsors. So stay tuned for our next episode, where we will discuss something new and break down everything for you. It would be appreciated if you guys could drop us a like and write us a review on your preferred platforms. Go check out our website for more information and check us out on Instagram. Share our podcast with your friends if you liked it. We're really grateful for those of you who've been tuned in so far, and we hope you guys can grow along with us on this journey wherever it takes us. And hit that outro!